This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. My name is Edward Fraser. I'm the brand's managing editor and the host today. Of course, we've got Ryan Kennedy, our associate senior writer and prospect expert. The preeminent prospect expert. And Matt Larkin, the writer, editor, doing a heck of a lot more writing than editing of late. But
I'm going to lose the slash one of these days.
That's Ken. Disappears for a month. Got to pick up the slack. later on in the show, we're going to be talking... Matt's actually got an interview with Dr. Bennett Omalu, who popularized CTE. Did I butcher it?
Yeah. Omalu.
Omalu. I can't get it right.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I even wrote it down.
I got it right when I talked to him.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yes.
It's more important for you to get it right than me.
And he got it right when he said his own name.
That's good, too. But anyways, I haven't heard the interview, but Matt says it's very interesting, and that's going to come up at the end of the podcast. But first of all, let's talk about the news of the week. Draisaitl. Woo! 8 years, signs the big deal, gets 8.5 per season. Matt, your thoughts. Is this an overpayment for a guy who, he's proven to be effective, but has he been $8.5 million effective?
I don't think it's an overpayment personally. I think it's a smart contract, and I think he might be worth a lot more. If the Oilers were to sign him to a bridge deal instead, then in a few years they might be thinking, oh man, I wish we had locked him up long term. I personally love the deal. You've got him and McDavid locked up. You have a lot of versatility with Draisaitl. He can play on McDavid's wing, and 77 points last year, we know he can be a big-time scorer. But Draisaitl's also very talented. He's the guy they called the German Wayne Gretzky. He was great in WHL. He was a top three pick in the NHL draft. Like, he's got legit pedigree. He's a good player on his own. And for stretches of the playoffs last year, especially against Anaheim, he was the best Edmonton Oiler on the ice. The guy can play. And I think we have to remember, too, the cap's going to keep going up. $8.5 million is not what it was even a couple years ago. And I think it was you, Ryan. You pointed that out when I was talking about Ryan Johansson's contract and thinking he's being overpaid. But I have to remember, it's 2017-18, and we have to start redefining what's an overpay and what's not.
Yeah, you're paying the dollar value. You're paying into the future for future equity. I mean, you look at the John Tavares deal when he signed it. At the time, you're thinking, okay, that's reasonable. Now, he's probably the best deal in the league. But, of course, he's approaching free agency. And, of course, I always like to point out here that when we're talking about $8.5 million, we're saying relatively.
Yes, relatively.
Yeah,
is and it a good deal?
I think it's also important to remember that, you know, as Matt kind of mentioned, you get a lot of versatility with Draisaitl. He's great on McDavid's wing, but he could also be a top-flight center for Edmonton in the years to come. So what you get in that situation is perhaps a sort of Western Crosby and Malkin situation where all of a sudden you have two amazing anchors down the middle in McDavid and Draisaitl who you can surround with talent. We know free agency won't be as big an issue for Edmonton as it has been in the past because you have this draw of these young players to play with. And they've also had some nice drafts of late, like Kyler Yamamoto, for example, their first rounder this summer. There's a kid who can be a great production winger for you with either McDavid or hypothetically Draisaitl. So when you're mapping out this Oilers team in the next few years, this next couple of cycles, I think, you know, GM Peter Shirley has given himself a lot of options. And I think that's the key of the Draisaitl deal is, like, he can be the perfect complement for McDavid or he can be a great matchup problem that the Oilers foist upon opponents.
My question at this point is, does this now create a window for the Oilers? Because you're going to run into some cap problems very soon. You're going to have Cam Talbot coming up, new deals for a guy like Klefbom. He's going to need some. He's going to get an up pay.
Jesse Puljujärvi eventually.
Assuming he comes in. So does this create a problem where the Penguins have had success with it, but it's hard to do if you've got top end and you see what's happened with the Hawks since the Taves and Kane deals kicked in. They haven't won a playoff game. So does this create a window where the Oilers have to basically win now, and are they ready to win now?
I think it does create a window, and I do think the Oilers, and I think the Leafs as well, they are looking at the Stan Bowman model and also the Pittsburgh Penguins model right now of going very top-heavy and then finding replacement from within and repeatedly doing it. And Pittsburgh's done an amazing job. Everyone gives so much credit to Bowman and Chicago for doing it, but the Penguins have also become a model franchise because their development system, and Jason Botterill gets a lot of credit, in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, one of the most awkward city names to say. I want to throw up when I say it. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Scranton, or Wilkes-Barre, whatever you are.
Wilkes-Barre, yeah.
But it's two places.
It's two places. It's not one. But they've done such a good job of taking prospects who weren't necessarily, you know, first-round pick blue chippers and developing them to fit the system of Mike Sullivan, and they come up, and the Penguins, you know, have a lot of money tied into a few players, but then you have your Jake Guentzels and your Connor Sheary, your Brian Rust coming up, and the Oilers are a very unique team because they can use that model, but they've also been so bad for so long that they have more high-end talents that they can bring up, including a Jesse Puljujarvi. So I do think, yes, it's going to be that window, but I also think that the Oilers are going to be a team that keeps using that model. And as long as you have your McDavid to build around and Draisaitl, you can keep replacing the guys around them and stay competitive.
Yeah, and I think the big thing in the next couple of years is they're going to have to figure out ways of shedding big contracts that were signed kind of on the cusp of the McDavid era. Like, we know Milan Lucic, a big reason why he came to Edmonton was because of McDavid. But maybe that salary of Lucic's doesn't look so good in 2 years, and you got to find a taker that takes, you know, pennies on the dollar in terms of the return. Andreas Sequeira is the same way, where, you know, he's going to be injured to start the season, but, you know, that's a pretty hefty price tag. Maybe you're fine this year, but the year after that, and I know there's no trade clauses, but they can be worked out. You know, maybe you shed him and a kid like Ethan Bear comes up on the blue line, or Caleb Jones, where they're going to be on either entry-level deals or very nice, you know, bridge contracts because they're probably spending a little more time in the minors. Those are going to be the sort of incremental moves that the Oilers will have to make in order to get the Klefbaums re-signed and the McDavids and Draisaitls, you know, with their hefty tickets already. You got to figure out a way to squeeze it all in, Talbot being another one. You got to keep going on the fly. And if they can do that, then I think their window extends pretty much the length of these contracts for McDavid and Draisaitl.
8-year window is pretty nice.
It's a very nice window. That's a big window.
That's a great room window.
Yeah. The one, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus here, but the one that came out was like, well, somebody said in the aftermath of these deals, like, well, a guy like Patrick Maroon's going to need a new deal, and he's going to get big money. Patrick Maroon.
Not in Edmonton.
No, and that's exactly right. If somebody will overpay him thinking what he did was on his own merit, not playing with McDavid. And while Patrick Maroon is a perfectly serviceable player, somebody's going to give him Matt Bileski money.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Keep him away from Boston.
Yeah, yeah. Put the phone down, Cam.
Don, you don't want to.
Don't let Cam on the line.
Well, that's a good transition into Boston and our next topic. David Pastrnak, very talented young player, looking like going to be a cornerstone of an organization that is kind of straddling, you know, they've had some recent struggles, but have a lot of nice prospects coming up and could get back into contention really quickly. This is a guy they need, though. But it's not looking good. They're not able to come to terms. What should David Pastrnak be getting? And if they can't get him, does he get traded?
Oh, boy. I think there's a pretty solid range established for Pastrnak. I think the bottom of the range is Philip Forsberg, which is 6 years at $6 million per. Pastrnak's numbers are in line with Forsberg's, if not a little bit better, actually, this year. Pastrnak played on, I think, the best line in the NHL this year with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron. At the top end of the spectrum is now Draisaitl, who had 77 points. And again, if we're redefining the dollar figures with the cap going up, I don't know if it's quite fair to look for Draisaitl money because Draisaitl has that versatility
yes.
in two positions. But something
he's also a little more proven.
Yeah, he's a little bit more proven because Pastrnak, he was always teasing until last year really went nuts, whereas Draisaitl topped 50 points the year before. I think something in the range of what Johnny Gaudreau got, what Tarasenko got, which was 8 years at 7.5, I think that's a more realistic number for Pastrnak, so maybe a bit less than Draisaitl, but more than Philip Forsberg. As for a trade, I don't know what the hell to think. I mean, they shouldn't trade him, but no one thought Dougie Hamilton was going to get traded, and it was in the middle of a contract dispute, and he got traded. So all bets are off.
Or Tyler Seguin.
Or Tyler Seguin.
Or Phil Kessel. Somebody pointed out, too, that, like, other than Dougie Hamilton, all those guys, or maybe even Doug Hamblin, all those guys were like 21 years old when the Bruins traded him, and Pastrnak's 21 right now. It's like, oh no!
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm with you. I was thinking kind of like 7 years, 7 million, maybe even 7.5. Or you go 8 for 7 million. You look at his numbers and they're pretty close to Draisaitl's, and like you said, I mean, he's a great two-way player, great possession guy. If you're talking trade, ironically, I was kind of thinking, it's like, I don't know why you would ever do it if you were Edmonton, but it's like, would you do a Draisaitl for Pastrnak trade where, you know, like, maybe there's a pick that goes one way or another, just because they're so similar in terms of impact right now.
Yeah.
That's like my easy answer, but I mean, it's not going to happen, because if you're the Oilers, you're like, we've got our guy under contract. Why would we want to mess it up?
Totally.
But in terms of the talent level you could get in return for Pastrnak, I think you're looking at like pretty top tier based on what he's already done.
What about a jump the shark trade? I would never do this, but just made me laugh thinking about it. Pastrnak to Washington for Ovechkin.
Wow.
Ooh. Woo!
See, if I'm Boston, ooh, I think I'm just like, well, I guess if you don't have him under contract, then you say like, well, you know, we're not in a position of strength here.
I think Washington wins that deal, given how young Pastrnak
is. Yeah, totally.
Yes, but Boston's, yeah, I mean, Pastrnak might even be a better player than Ovechkin is now. But, I mean, Washington's in much more win-now mode. And this goes beyond. This goes to marketing. This goes to face the franchise.
Sure.
That's,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is some jump the shark stuff right there.
Mm-hmm. Long story short, don't try to trade David Pastrnak, because you won't get full value, and you should keep him because he's really good.
Well, I mean, if you trade Pastrnak, I mean, you're not a rebuilding team if you're Boston. Like, you're a super middling team. You're not
floating in the middle right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're maybe a playoff team, maybe, but you still have your core in place: Marchand, Bergeron, Rask, Chara. But if you want to tear it down and go full rebuild, I guess maybe you trade Pastrnak for a package that would be somewhat similar. But isn't he a guy
that's who you rebuild with.
So
he's still one of the younger players in the league. And when he first came in, he was the youngest player in the entire NHL.
Yeah.
And if you trade him for a now asset, I mean, there's not a guy across the league who you could get in return who would push Boston into contender status.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah. Is there any chance he gets a bridge deal? Or approve it sort of 3-year contract? And
I don't think he needs to prove it, but the only thing I could see would be Pastrnak signing a bridge deal and saying, you guys proved to me that I should hang around long term.
Kind of like Jacob Trouba in Winnipeg or Ryan Johansson in Columbus before he ended up getting traded.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Sort of, okay, fine, let's stop fighting. We need each other for now.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's move over to reader questions. We've got thanks guys for sending all the good questions this week. Too many to actually get through before we get to the interview, but let's start with, if you had any guests today, this is from Bob Anderson, if you had any guests today who makes the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, who would you choose and why? Matty, I'll start with you.
Okay, Western Conference Final. I'm trying to remember who I picked to win the division. I mean, I have Edmonton going to the Stanley Cup Final. I think they're ready. I think they showed last year that they can win not just because of Connor McDavid. McDavid is the biggest influencer, but they have enough assets other than him now that it can put them over the top. So I see the Oilers going all the way to the final, and I think Nashville can get back. Just people forget, like, we shouldn't look at Nashville as a one-year wonder. Forsberg and Arvidsson are both young. They're just getting started. They both just topped 30 goals. And that blue line, all of those guys are in their mid to late 20s, more like mid-20s. So this team's going to stay good for a while. And I think in the regular season, they should be better. They came on late last year. So I see Nashville and Edmonton coming out on that side. And the East, I've got Pittsburgh winning, three-peating. And then it's going to be one of Tampa Bay or Toronto coming out of the Atlantic, in my opinion. I think it's going to be really tight. I think as a group we've leaned towards Tampa, but I personally had Toronto, I believe, when I did my own bracket. Very close though. But I think I'll say Toronto and Pittsburgh for the East.
You like your Pecorine, so he can get it done?
I mean, I think Nashville can still get pretty far in spite of him. And that's, sorry, Pekka, no disrespect. He's in his mid-30s.
Absolutely.
He's declining.
Absolutely. It's only age with an athletic goalie that's his issue.
And he's not the same goalie on the road. And I crunched the numbers, regular season and playoffs. it's a huge long-term trend for his entire career. He struggles on the road.
I will say this. I mean, maybe it's even a platoon situation, but the big thing is Saros is a capable backup, and he can play a big load this year. And that maybe that keeps Rene fresh for the playoffs. Rye, your picks?
Yeah, I like Edmonton coming out of the West. I think Dallas. I think this is the year where the Stars right the ship and really show us what they can do. It would be fun to see a team built around offense sort of march through the West, and I think that would be a pretty good matchup. In the East, yeah, I do see Pittsburgh again. I'm kind of in the same boat where Tampa and Toronto, I can definitely see coming out of that bracket, you know, if things kind of hold in that divisional mold, you know, if you don't have the wild cards. For some reason, just because things tend to be unpredictable, I'm going to say Toronto. They make that big sort of run after getting their feet wet. There's something about Tampa where, like, if they get injured again, I know you can't predict for injuries, but that would be my only worry about the Lightning is if they, no pun intended, get struck again. So I'll say Pittsburgh and Toronto with Tampa Bay being my runner up there.
Give me a dark horse from each conference, like a team that we don't think much about, but you personally think is primed to make a deep playoff run.
I would say it's funny, not necessarily primed for a deep run, but primed to get into the playoffs. I like Carolina. I think Carolina is going to take a step forward this year. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think Ron Francis has done a great job. They have one of the best young blue lines in the NHL, led by Slavin and Brett Pesce, and you still have Justin Falk back there. Noah Hanifin's still very young, going to keep getting better. You've got even more guys on the way, like Hayden Fleury, Jake Bean down the road. And that means they also have assets they can trade, because they're so stacked there, they can trade for that elusive first-line center. I'd love to see Carolina go for Matt Duchene. Even if they don't, though, what they have right now, they've added Justin Williams, they've got some good young forwards, Tuvo Tuurvainen, love Sebastian Aho. I think they're just a well-coached team. And Scott Darling, I'm not the biggest believer, but he, even if he isn't amazing, I still think he'll be an upgrade.
Behind that defense.
Yeah, behind that defense, better defense. I mean, based on Chicago's defense right now, I think the Carolina defense is better than what Darling's had in front of him as a whole. So I like Carolina to sneak in from the Metro this year.
In the West?
Ooh, the West. If I have a dark horse in the West, I don't know. Maybe it's a team like... deep dark horse, I don't know if it's going to be this year, but I actually think Arizona's going to improve a lot, and a lot more than people think. Like, they've added a lot. Like, you're going to have Clayton Keller probably making the team. Maybe Dylan Strome makes the team. You've added Nicholas Chalmerson. You're adding Antti Ranta and Net. You're adding Derek Steppen. So people smirk often, and Ed literally smirks.
I am literally smirking.
It's like, what are you smirking at? You're smirking at what you know is the Coyotes, but those aren't the Coyotes anymore.
Like, yeah, but there's different. A lot of question marks. If that works.
That's why they're a dark horse, though, right?
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
It's not a light horse.
It's an Eclipse-esque dark horse, yeah, Ryan.
Light horse, terrible name for a band.
Terrible name for a band.
I don't know if you'd really count them as a dark horse, but I think the Calgary Flames are a team that can make a big run.
Thank you, finally.
Yeah, and I mean, what would be really sort of intriguing is if you get a Battle of Alberta early in the playoffs, you know, I mean, if the Flames upset McDavid, that would be like huge.
Please, please let the Battle of Alberta happen.
Yeah, we need it. I feel like we came close last year and it didn't quite line up. But, you know, you look at that Calgary defense corps, Giordano, Dougie, they add Travis Hamonic, you know, TJ Brody. I mean, that's a huge top four right there. They've got some nice offense up front. You know, the goaltending, you're still kind of like in that post-traumatic Brian Elliott phase. But I think that, you know, with the additions they've made, all of a sudden it's a little more tenable. And Mike Smith, am I, like, the biggest believer? Not particularly. But again, like, as you said with Scott Darling, like, with the defense that he has in front of him, all he has to do is be decent.
Yeah.
And I think Mike Smith can be decent.
For what it's worth, I think the Flames are a brown horse. I didn't pick them because I have them winning the division.
That's an even worse name for a band.
Brown horse?
Like, that's just a horse, I guess,
just
right?
A horse. But, they're just a horse.
Yeah. But I think... to me, Calgary, like, they look so good that I wouldn't even call them a dark horse. Like, I like Calgary a lot.
Yeah, I'm just, I'm looking off standings. I mean, you know, we have them, like, third in the West.
Give me a quick East team. I took up too much of the reader question time with my own question.
There you go. I'll say the Florida Panthers. I know people think they're kind of, like, disparate parts, but you look at Vince Trocheck, Alexander Barkov, a healthy Jonathan Huberto, get a healthy Aaron Ekblad back. There's a lot of nice elements to that team, and I mean that Atlantic Division is so wishy-washy that, you know, like, Ottawa could win it or miss the playoffs entirely.
Absolutely.
And there's so, you know, Toronto could take a step back.
Six teams that applies for.
Yeah, exactly.
Miss the playoffs or win the division.
Yeah or you're Detroit.
Or
Buffalo. Or Buffalo. Yeah, so I think Florida's an interesting team to watch for.
Flames in the Stanley Cup.
Nice.
Woo!
Book it!
Hot fire!
Book it. All right, let's get one more reader question in here. It's a Leafs question, but let's do it anyways. Do you feel the Leafs will try to upgrade their defense before the season, and who might that D-man be, and at what cost?
I think if the upgrade was going to happen before the season, it would have happened by now.
Yeah.
So I think we know they kicked the tires on Travis Hamonic. I do think they're going to pursue one in season, especially if they're in contention. And I do think it'll mean sacrificing either a young winger like Connor Brown. I mean, people keep talking about James Van Riemsdyk, but he's such an important part of a team that's contending this year. I don't think they're going to rush to trade Van Riemsdyk just yet. So I would look more to Connor Brown, especially because the Leafs are probably going to want to make room for Jeremy Bracco down the line or Kasperi Kapanen, who can both play the right wing. So losing a Connor Brown wouldn't be the dumbest idea, especially because he's got some value. He's coming off a 20-goal rookie season. Or I think the Leafs may have to trade one of their young prospects, whether it's Adam Brooks or a Jeremy Bracco. It might be worth it. They have so many good young forwards. They have a logjam, and we know they need help on defense.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's funny. I was thinking about this a while ago that I want to make a list of prospects that could be traded because they have such nice value to them. And Jeremy Bracco to me is like the perfect example where if you're one of the other 30 NHL teams and you're looking to trade with Toronto, I think you look at Bracco and say, like, wow, that kid's got some dynamic elements to his game. He's already been a winner, you know, at the junior level. You know, if the Leafs don't need him, we would be happy to take him off his hands. I'm looking at, like, Ryan Murray in Columbus as an option, especially with the way the Blue Jackets are coming together. Zach Werenski obviously is a star there already, and you put him with Seth Jones. They've got a little more depth there than they have in past years, especially with, like, Gabriel Carlson coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were rumors about Matt Dumba in Minnesota. I don't know, you know, losing Marco Scandella, maybe that puts the Wild in a different position. But on the other hand, like, what if Minnesota has a down year and they don't think they're going to make it in that brutal Central Division? Maybe somebody gets sacrificed, then they look at the future. The last one I would think in a similar situation with Los Angeles, and I'm not going to go crazy Drew Doughty conspiracy here, but if the Kings fall out of contention, do they maybe ship a Jake Muzzin to Toronto? You know, somebody that the Leafs can put into the fold that will, you know, be like a number two or three that could really help sort of bring up the level of that decor and not come at like an exorbitant price, but it is a Bracco and a pick, or maybe it is Kapanen, maybe it is Zach Hyman, or Connor Brown, you know, one of those guys that has value, but you say to yourself, if you're the Leafs, like, well, you know, you gotta break eggs to make an omelet, and we need to set, the reason you build up a pipeline is so that you have assets.
Right.
All right, well, we'll leave it there for today so we can get to the interview. Matt, you want to cue this up for us?
Sure, yeah. I had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Bennett Omalu, and he is the guy that Will Smith played in the movie Concussion. And he obviously, he wrote a letter joining in the NHL concussion lawsuit last year. He was calling out the NHL. And he's a guy who's very opposed to contact sports, especially in children. Had some very interesting things to say, so I hope you enjoy the interview.
For our listeners and our readers, for the layman listener and reader, who might not know a lot about CTE, could you sort of summarize what the threat is relative to hockey versus football? And what I mean is, I know in football there's more contact per play, right?
I wouldn't want people to focus on CTE because I think there is now almost an obsession with CTE.
Oh, I see.
CTE is not the only type of brain damage.
Hmm.
It's just one type.
Right, okay.
Okay, there's a broad spectrum of brain damages from playing high impact contact sports. And the issue is not about the individual sports, no. The issue is about any human activity whereby the human head is exposed to repeated blows of the head.
Right.
Okay. And the question, like when I was in Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, 2 months ago, the question I asked them is, when you play rugby, is your head exposed to repeated blows? And the audience screamed, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the question each and every parent has to ask and answer. If my child plays hockey, is my child's head exposed to repeated blows of the head? The answer to that is yes. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what science tells us is there is no safe blow to the human head, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, every blow to your child's head has a potential of causing some type of brain damage to a certain degree, with or without CTE. The more forceful the blow is, the more likelihood of damage and the more severe the damage would be. The more repetitive the blow is, the more likelihood of damage and the more severe the brain damage would be. Nobody would dispute that in science.
Right.
And science is telling us that if you receive repeated blows to your head, you can suffer brain damage without ever suffering a concussion.
Hmm.
Okay. A concussion is a type of brain damage. So once you've suffered a concussion, you've suffered brain damage.
Yes.
People need to know that. And all it can take a human being to suffer permanent brain damage, which will remain with you for the rest of your life, is just one concussion.
Right.
Okay? Now, this is not about CTE. If you suffer at least one concussion, studies are showing that it increases your risk of dying before the age of 42.
Hmm. Wow.
Dying more, especially from violent causes. Okay? Two, it increases your risk of committing suicide by about 2 to 4-fold.
Hmm.
It increases your risk of suffering a major psychiatric illness in your lifetime, including major depression, by 2 to 4-fold.
Mm-hmm.
It increases your risk to engage in disinhibition. Disinhibition is a phenomenon whereby you lose control of yourself. You're more likely to engage in sexual improprieties. You're more likely to engage in social improprieties. You're more likely to engage in violent behavior. You're more likely to engage in criminal behavior.
I see.
Okay? When you play these games and suffer at least one concussion, you're less likely to attain high levels of academic achievement. You're more likely to drop out of high school or not to attend college. And you're more likely to be less gainfully employed as an adult. You're more likely to be a recipient of the welfare payouts, or disability pension payouts. This is what science has always told us.
Right.
And then another one people don't realize, if you suffer these injuries, you're more likely to become a drug addict and to abuse alcohol.
I see. And would you say, is there a flip side where people who are more likely to commit crimes and things like that, violent crimes, are they also more likely in the first place to engage in risky behavior that could cause concussions?
Okay, this is the same concept we have in seizure disorder.
Right.
Okay? If you start exposure at a very young age, like at 5 to 6, okay?
Mm-hmm.
By the time you're about 10 to 12, you're already engaging in risky behavior. But nobody will remember, nobody will make the association between your early exposure and your behavior in your early teens. Does that make sense?
Yes, for sure.
So it sets up a cascade.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I see.
So early exposure should be stopped. Like in every potentially dangerous factor in our lives, the first thing we do is to protect our children.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more.
That's why children don't join the military. Because the military is potentially harmful.
Yes, good analogy, for sure.
Although a minority of military personnel die in wars and battles, but yet children don't join the military. And yet, the preparedness and readiness of our military is not in any way undermined by children not joining the military early.
Right. Good.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's a great analogy. I think I have one other major topic to ask about, and it is just, I know that you've had some recent linking to the NHL concussion lawsuit.
Oh, yeah, you saw my letter.
Yeah, so I'm that's right. So I'm curious, I know it's been more publicized, your thoughts on the NFL and how they've handled everything, but I'm curious, what do you think the NHL needs to do better in terms of education and understanding, and what mistakes are they making?
The first thing I must tell parents is, don't make it about the NHL.
Right.
The NHL is a corporation. And what do corporations do? Make money, turn out profits. So as somebody with an MBA from one of the top business schools in the world, the Tepper School of Business, I believe in the free market. I believe in the capital economy.
I see.
So leave corporations alone to sell their products and services and make money. The product of the NHL is ice hockey. Their service is entertainment. The NHL is not in the business of health care. They are not in the business of health education. They are not in the business of public health. They are not in the business of medical research. So we shouldn't expect that from them.
Right.
Okay? We shouldn't.
Right, it makes sense. I hadn't thought of it that way. I really hadn't. But it's an eye-opening way to look at it. Yeah, you're right.
When we are tied down, we are misplacing we are misappropriating the science, really, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is why my book is focused on the parents. It's like the Reynolds that makes cigarettes. Leave them alone. They have a product to sell. It's like people that make guns and bullets. That's their product. Okay?
Right.
But having said that, my advice to the NHL is there is only one truth. Truth doesn't have a side. Truth doesn't have a perspective or a prospective. There is only one truth.
Good.
No alternative truth. And as a corporation, when you fail to recognize the truth for what it is, no matter how inconvenient, difficult, and painful it may be, you can never develop a solution to that truth. All you could have is an alternative truth and alternative solutions that would never be your real solution. And when you do that, you're putting your long-term sustainability in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Because society evolves, society changes. If you refuse to embrace the truth, society will leave you behind. If you don't agree with me, look at Blockbuster and look at Kodak.
Yeah.
But if you agree with me, look at Tesla.
Right.
15, 20 years ago, when Elon Musk came up with the battery-powered car because he recognized the truth of global warming, Bill Brandt laughed at him and ridiculed him.
Mm-hmm.
He kept the faith, embraced the truth for what it is, and was seeking the real solutions to the truth.
Right.
The truth will always prevail. Look at today. Who is prevailing? Tesla.
Tesla everywhere, yeah, yeah.
And in another 10, 20 years, Tesla will be the predominant vehicle on the road. I bought my own Tesla a couple of weeks ago.
Good.
Okay, so you see the long-term sustainability. Okay? Tesla recognized the truth for what it was and embraced the truth. The truth will always prevail. So they are now prevailing with the truth. What is happening to the other automobile brands? Let me share with you what I learned when I went to order my car. I was told at Tesla that a great majority of their new customers were customers of Mercedes-Benz, BMW, and Volvo.
Really?
So Tesla is increasing her market share because it embraced and recognized the truth for what it was. That is the advice I have for the NHL.
That's great advice.
When you continue to deny and fight and ridicule the truth, it's very myopic and short-sighted.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I love the analogy. I really do.
Your long-term sustainability will be in doubt. And the equity of your brand equity, would be undermined.
I see.
This is a strictly business advice.
For sure.
Okay? From somebody who has spent so much time thinking about these issues. Come out, hey, this is a contact sport. It's potentially harmful like many other things in our lives. Everybody needs to know that. Period.
Right.
There's nothing else you have to say. Mm-hmm. It's a potentially harmful sport. Like many other things in our lives, everybody needs to know that.
Period. For sure. For
We're
sure.
not in the business of healthcare or public education. However, we can give money to independent researchers to develop solutions. Period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Excellent.
Period.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing that simple.
For sure. It's
something
great advice.
Nothing that simple. And then for those who have played and have suffered brain damage, bring out a percentage of your revenue. Say, okay, 10% we will use to pay for the health monitoring and whatever compensation of the players in the past. 10% of your multi-billion dollar profits, what is it? It's not much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is my advice to them, period. If you notice, I'm not attacking them. I'm just giving them very good advice, like I would advise my brother.
For sure.
Because
sure.
Everything I do out of love of humanity. I believe we all are one greater family. We are all one. One body, one spirit, one hope, one joy, one happiness. So whatever I do for the least of us, for any of us, I do for all of us.
Good.
That is my modus operandi, brandus or whatever.
Yeah.
That is my foundation. I have not made any money from all this, but I've lost money. Okay, it's the truth. And that was why I gave my book the name Truth Doesn't Have a Side.
I see.
I wrote that book in response to hundreds and thousands of parents reaching out to me. Okay, I wrote it to tell the story of my journey of faith, my journey of science, and my journey of life. So that after you've read about my journeys, you can be in a better position to answer this question for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do I love ice hockey more than I love my son or daughter?
Right.
If you love ice hockey more than you love your child, my book would give you solace. But if you love your child more than you love ice hockey, my book would give you peace.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Hockey News Podcast.